Hello, everyone, and welcome to Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland. On today's program, my guest is Tim Dumas, a.k.a. the Lab Guy. Tim is a consultant to medical device distributors and manufacturers around the country, and he has over 30 years of knowledge and experience as a clinical laboratory scientist, manager, and consultant. In 1980, Tim attended laboratory training at Midwestern State University and earned his laboratory degree through the United States Air Force. In 1992, he started his first physician office laboratory and has established over 100 physician office laboratories since then and has advised many more. Tim is a regular speaker and teacher at the COLA conferences and has assisted with beta testing of their clinical laboratory educational programs. Tim has contributed articles to many publications, including MLO, Lab Advance, AAFP, and a regular column in Repertoire magazine. Tim is also a professional magician, humorist, and a graduate of Artistic New Directions in New York City. Tim combines that business background and that performing talent to present his educational and entertaining interactive workshops across the United States. In 2004, Tim received his certification as a national speaker from the National Speakers Association, and Tim helps his clients enhance their employee morale, quality of patient care, and strategies for maximizing lab revenue. Tim is dedicated to helping people with the imagine the impossible and find a way to do it. Tim, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome, Lee. Thanks for inviting us.
Try that again. Your mic's not working. Try it again there.
I said thanks. There you go. You're welcome. Thanks for inviting us, Lee.
It's my pleasure to have you here. Now, you own TLD Consulting with your wife, Lisa, who's also here with us in the studio today. So tell us about TLD Consulting and tell us about humor in the workplace and your improv and all of that kind of thing, too.
Sure. Well, like you said earlier, my background is in science. My true love, of course, was performing, but making a living was working better being a scientist. When the government took over laboratories back in the early 90s, I was working at hospitals, and a doctor came to me, and all of a sudden he had all these hoops that he had to jump through and said, "Do you know what these regulations are?" And I didn't. But I learned them. We all learned them together, and now that's the way most – if you go into a doctor's office and they draw your blood and they do the blood work in the office, that's what we do. We set up the laboratory so they can run it without having to send it to a big commercial lab somewhere. Nothing wrong with commercial labs. Faster results is faster treatment. It's better patient care, and that's always been our motto. So that's kind of – Lisa and I started the company with that. Our core value was to produce accurate, fast results. And that led to faster patient care. And it saved everybody a lot of money all the way around. You don't have to call the patient back. They get their results. They get treatment. They walk out the door. They don't have to miss work. They don't have to come back. So it just made a lot of sense. So that's what we did. We kind of built the part of it was the management program. And through years of experience, that's how we built that up. Lisa's background was teaching at a university as radiology. So she was real good at writing and organizing the procedures and keeping all my scientific talk out of it, because that was sometimes she'd read a procedure and go, "I don't get it."
Too much lingo.
And a lot of it was written for people who didn't have the knowledge of the lingo. And so that was really helpful, too. So between the two of us, we built a successful company. We became a distributor about 7 years ago, I think. I had trouble getting some of the analyzers I wanted. So that worked out. That became the other part, and that's the part that she runs. She handles all the orders and supplies and stuff like that, and I still do a lot of the consulting, management, and marketing. I do the lectures and write the articles and stuff that stick to that as well.
So in building TLD Consulting, you've been really successful, and you're a veteran-owned business, woman-owned business, and in your distributorship. And so how has that balancing of your leadership background that you learned in the military, your skill set out there in the improv and those kind of things, how's that made you uniquely positioned to succeed? And what lessons can you share today with our listeners that while they might not have that same background, how can they take what you've learned and become successful using those tips?
Yeah, I think that's been really instrumental in that. I understand working with people. It is really, it's about service. When you talk to someone, what do they want? What are you there? You know, both Lisa and I have this philosophy that there are no accidents. When someone's put in your path, it's because they're either there to give you something or you're there to give them something.
Right.
And to ignore that is bad for life. You should just ask that question. Am I here to help them, or are they here to help me,
or both? Right.
Exactly. And it usually ends up being both. So we set a core value of the company to be in service of. And by producing the results that we do by the lab tests, it helps people medically get treated faster. So that was part of the idea. The way we did it together was interesting. You know, we moved to Raleigh, started the business new, worked with a lot of the network groups. And so I was a scientist. Lisa was a scientist. We had never done business before.
Right.
So the network groups were instrumental in teaching me networking and business and how other people, what you know, they went to business school and they have MBAs in it. So they had a different take on,
right.
You know, like, Tim, you have a really good idea, but you're going to go broke because you don't know business. So I really learned a lot from them, but I also gave them the artistic side. So
right.
What I brought to it was my passion, my art. I had done an article actually for NSA. I did a workshop for them. National Speakers Association.
Not the government agency.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. They are different people now.
Sorry.
But I was asked to come up, you know, how do you make yourself in business? I always say you should stand out. You should be unique. Well, how do you be unique?
In a good way.
In a good way. That's right. Because people will make you just do what you feel natural. So here's my formula for it. So you take your education, your business, the thing that you got trained in, and you bring your passion. What do you do for a hobby? What do you love to do? Do you love art? Do you love music or whatever that is? And bring that in with them. Combine those two. Even when you're talking to people, you know, if you're a car salesman, you're a college salesman. By the way, I play banjo on the weekends. Now you've got a connection personally with that other person. Go, I play banjo too. So it makes you the person that you are. And by doing that, it will evolve into, you can't plan this. It's organic.
Right.
You'll evolve into the person that makes you unique. And you can't point, you won't understand it. Uniqueness comes from other people pointing, going, that's different and that's unique.
Right.
If you plan to be unique, like this is what I want to be, it shows that way. It's not organic, and
it's not authentic. It doesn't resonate
authentic.
With people,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. In the theater world, I see it all the time with people who just do things to stand out, but they just do it to stand out. It's not really who
they
are.
Any attention is good attention. That's why some people approach
it,
right?
And
yeah,
and it's not. Any attention is not good attention. Bad attention is not good for you. So being able to bring that and teach the guys that kind of stuff, that other perspective of bringing in your art and your knowledge. Bring those two things together. Don't be afraid to show who you are, that no matter how weird it is, because it's actually, I as the more I studied it, I discovered that thing that you feel is uncomfortable that makes you weird, that's the part that makes you unique, and that's the part that people try to hide. So in teaching them, when they said to me, how do I get to be unique, I'd bring out that part of you that's weird. Oh no, that's weird. I don't want to bring that out, then you're not going to be unique.
Right.
You're missing
the whole
point.
Think, you know, everybody wants to be unique within the boundaries of being the same as everybody
right.
else. They don't want to stand out, because being different as you grow up is you're the nerd, you're the geek, you know, you're this weird person in class, and everybody's like, you're not like the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
But in business, you need to be not like the rest of us.
Right. Right. Yeah, if you want to stand out. And I think that comes from growing. I grew up as a foster kid, so a lot of different homes, and I was adopted by a family member. So there was, for the most of it, a lot of love. You know, my teenage years, a lot of not pressure to be educated, but learning to love educate.
Right.
Not even an expectation of like, here's the book. Here's an encyclopedia. Read it if you want to. It was a hands-off kind of like, here's all the opportunities. I mean, we were on welfare. It's not like we had a lot, but we had books, and
right.
we had a library. And that was it. It was like, so if you're bored, read a book.
Remember the bookmobiles?
I do remember the
bookmobiles. I loved bookmobiles.
That's one thing that I thought was interesting when Tim and I were first doing business, is we talked about thinking outside the box.
Right.
Because and that's why Tim and I think we work well together, is I'm more analytical, organized. You know, I do the financing and the managing. And I would say to him, well, that's really interesting. You know, that's really a unique way to look at it and outside the box. And, you know, Tim and I had this revelation that he never knew there was a box. So
right.
I think that really helped us to bring that unique perspective, that creativity to the business that we did.
The practical and the creative come together to make it.
Yeah, I didn't learn the box till later. And there's a
You're standing on the box. I know you, Tim.
I'm like, there's
all right,
a box?
Lisa, we have to admit, Tim would be standing on the box, and it's there for performing.
And
that's the only reason you recognize
right,
that
box. It's like, there's a box. You're on the, there's a box? I didn't see a box.
You're standing on it.
Yeah. I didn't know.
Tim would tend to stand on that box. I've known Tim for a number of years. So he used to help me make my business stand out because he would come and perform his magic acts and do improv at my booths at different events. And I would always get a crowd.
It was always fun.
Yeah.
It still is.
It still is. So in building a unique business, you're not doing something that's unique necessarily skill set wise, because it's other people do lab consulting, but you're saying it's that personality that of you, the owner, the business owners, and how you do business and how you look at things. And we were talking about this last week over lunch. You didn't set out to grow your business.
Right.
You set out to serve your customer and your business grew.
That's right.
So talk about that some for us.
Yeah. So getting the core value, when I talk about the core value of our business, we discovered what we were doing as a core value after being in business for a number of years. The first thing was, here's what I want to do. I want to be able to create these results for patients. That's all we did. As I did it, people would guide me as to, well, now you should do this to make it a business. Now you should do that to make it a business.
Right.
Oh, look, it's a business. You know, it was the same thing with being a consultant. I was running this laboratory for about 10 years, and I did a lot of stuff that was new. It was new for everybody.
Right.
These government regulations were new. But I was successful. So I would get calls from other medical offices, and I was in New York at the time. Well, how do you do this? How do you do that? And I would say, well, have your head nurse call me, and I'll show her where to go for the paperwork, and I'll help you with your application. And then, you know, after 10 years, someone much wiser than me said, you really ought to get paid for this. I'm like, you think? I'm just, again, I was trying to help people.
Right.
I was serving. But it became about that. And actually, it's odd because I think it was 2003. Lisa was teaching at the university. I had a full laboratory, private lab, working very well.
It's about the time we met.
We both quit our jobs, left New York, and moved to Raleigh. With everything going fine, we just needed a change. We knew there was something else. It was, I could serve more people. And to serve the people, it was going to be an entertainment. I got out of the laboratory world completely, and all I did was tour doing magic and comedy. Toured the country doing that. And
he is so good at it.
Thank you. Thank you. Then I got called in. I knew another lab consultant down here, and she was having problems with the lab and said, could you just go in for a week and help these people out? And I said, yes. So I did. And as it turns out, that same time, Lisa got very sick. She had a ovarian cyst that had to be removed. Of course, I was an entertainer, so I didn't have insurance, right? We got two teenage kids. We were trying to do that. And the guy at the medical office said, come to work full time or at least 32 hours a week, and I'll give you benefits. Boom. So everything happens.
Life happened, and you ended up where you were supposed to be.
For a reason. So you follow that guide. When an opportunity comes up, don't say no. Say, what is it going to be? You know, we have a saying in improvisation. When you hit the stage, sometimes you just go on stage, and especially with improv, you don't know what you're going to do. And one of the things I will often, if I don't know what to do in a scene, to break into a scene, I can see it's drowning. I'll run. I just run on stage. I'll do a couple loops, and I don't know why I'm running, but I find out real fast. Because the other characters will point out, oh, that's the guy that stole the money. You know what I mean?
Right, it triggers something else.
They create it. So it's a partnership with society. It's a partnership with people. Just start running, and you'll find out why you're running in a minute. Take a job.
Okay, there is a commentary then. If they always think it's the guy that stole the money versus the workout freak.
That's right.
It's like, what does that say about who's doing the improv?
It could be.
But you're out there, and you're taking that authentic caring for people. And it translates then, so suddenly you have a business and you're putting a structure behind this product that's out there that everybody's asking you for.
Mm-hmm.
And you're finding your way through that. So how did you find the next customer? Because we know how you found the first customer. Somebody called and said, can you come in and do this?
Sure.
How did you build from that?
And that's where speaking came from. So at the time, I had taken my theater training into a business into the National Speakers Association.
Okay.
So I generated workshops on time management. My first program was actually called Imagine the Impossible and Find a Way to Do It. So again, even my speaking, not just my knowledge, but my art of magic came into play. So the whole theory of Imagine the Impossible and Find a Way to Do It came from a kid when I was doing a magic show. And I forget how old I was. A kid came up and he didn't ask me how I did the trick. He said, how do you guys come up with this stuff?
Right. Good
question. And then I thought about it, and to just put it simple terms as well, what magicians do to come up with a trick, we think of something impossible and then we figure out how to do it.
Right.
And that's really how simple it is. It's like, so I want to pour water in a cup and just take it right from there. Pour the water in the cup, tip it upside down over my head, and not have the water come out. Okay, that seems pretty impossible. Let's figure out how we can do it. And that was actually what I used to do in the workshops when I would start the workshop and I explained this idea of future pacing. That's what I'd say. So we're going to work back. So I'd say to everybody, I'm going to pour the water in the cup. They can all see me do it. They all agree if I tip it up, but I tip it upside down and the water is gone. It's completely, it vanishes. And everybody's astounded. Then I ask that same group of people, how many of you think I know how I did it? And I'll get 5 or 6 different methods. There's a secret pocket in the cup, or there's a tube up your sleeve, or there's some kind of special chemical that solidifies. All kinds of great ideas. So now we took something that 2 minutes ago was impossible, and now I got 5 or 6 different actual workable ways that it could be done. And I'm like, so what stopped you 2 minutes ago from thinking you could do it? That's not impossible. You could have a thing in there, but people don't. We get lazy with our thoughts.
Or it's that structure that we're tend to be, you know, everything is within that box of possibility.
Yes, a box.
And when we've defined this realm in our businesses and our lives, this is all that I'm capable of doing. And it's either self-generated or it's what you've heard through your childhood or your schooling or whatever. You can't do that. Well, why can't I do that? Some people say, well, if you tell me I can't, I'm going to figure out how I can.
Exactly.
And other people see that box and crawl in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're saying magicians look at it and say, well, if you told me I can't, and I think I can't, then I need to find a way.
Yeah. And it's not even in a defiance what do you mean? Yes, I can't. It's just like a playful puzzle solving for me.
Right.
And most magicians that I know, actually, mentors that have taught me, it's kind of like wouldn't it be cool if we can do this? And here's how you would do it. And I'm still, I attend meetings. We have a great magic community here in the Raleigh-Durham area. I just learned some new tricks last week that I had a great time with. I ended up doing a school show at night, and it was just awesome. But it's always new. It's always, when I look and see how other people figure it out, it's just really cool. Yeah. And it is that idea. We have a pretty good size, won't say huge, children's group of magicians.
Right.
So we're teaching them the same thing. It's not just in magic, but it's in life. Most magicians are successful business people as well for a reason.
Well, because that same attitude, it's
the
fun.
Same attitude.
Let me figure out how I can figure it out. Okay, it didn't work this way. I'll do something else.
I'll
and that's that willingness,
yeah.
right?
And the idea of not being afraid to look to mentor someone who's already done it. Ask them. It's so often, I don't know why, but especially in business people and like that, and they will say that is like, well, I didn't want to bother them. I didn't know what I should do. Don't be afraid to ask people who are successful. They love telling you how they got that way, usually. And that's what I'm trying to teach kids. Look for a mentor.
And I think kids have to learn those restrictions. And so when you're looking for them to the possibilities, to be childlike, even in your business. Why can't I try this? Or so what if it fails, right? You know, you try an ad. So what if it didn't work? Try something else. And you're just willing to find success through being willing to repeat the experiment, right?
Well, yeah, and it's a cliche, but failure is the foundation of success.
Yes.
You can't. That's what builds success is, you know, that Thomas Edison didn't invent the light bulb. He invented 10 different ways not to make a light.
And
10,
then he got, yeah.
different ways. And then he got that. Right.
Why were you successful? Because that's the question to him. Why are you successful? And he goes, I don't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And we find it too. Both Lisa and I, for, you know, one of the things we have to do is decide what clients we're going to work with. And one of the ways we did that was by setting up our core value. So if you understand what's our core value, any business that doesn't strengthen that core value, then that's probably not the guy to work on. You're going to lose focus. You're going to get out. You can do that later when you're very successful.
And you're back to that in service.
In service for people.
To the patient.
Here's what I need to do. And then also learning people. We've had a couple clients that we've had to work with over the year that I was trying to mentor to help. But it turns out
they wanted it done for them.
They were just they were just, their personalities were just like, oh, we are never going to work. That you have bigger issues than that. And Lisa's the one who catches that and goes, no, she's what we call in society crazy.
Or what I've always said, I don't do flat forehead syndrome. I refuse to stand there and beat my head against a brick wall trying to get someone to change. Because everyone has to be willing to change and learn.
Yeah. And as a consultant, we get that all the time. I know several jobs that I could have taken consulting good money, but I turned them down for that reason. Even speaking gigs, I had a CEO I was working with, and I was doing it was a customer service program,
right?
And so, but it was based on team building, and the company they needed, everybody was unhappy, and if everybody's unhappy, forget customer service. So once I saw his operation, I said, we need to start with team building. Everybody needs to feel that they're part of the business, and he, well, that's the way we run this. So we're talking, we're walking down the hall, and there was a gum wrapper. Somebody threw a gum wrapper on the floor. Nice carpeted, beautiful, brand new building. I bent over to pick it up. And the guy says to me, oh, don't do that. We have janitors to do that.
Right.
And I said to him, really? I said, well, this won't work. Because I said that the problem in your company is you. If your whole idea is that, no, we have specific people for, like, an employee doesn't have the freedom to walk down and pick up a gum wrapper, that just helps your business. That's insane. That's why your company is the way it's. It's because that's what you've taught. They're going to go by your leadership.
Well, and not only that's sometimes symptomatic of how the employees feel if they're willing to put trash on the floor.
Yeah. Exactly.
How do you feel? I mean, you're basically trashing your working environment, right? Rather than walking over to the trash can. I mean, if you miss it, throwing it. But again, that's symptomatic to how everyone's feeling.
Right.
You don't make a mess in your own home.
Especially if you feel free to do it because there's a janitor that's going to do that for it. Why should I? I'll just throw it. I'm privileged. I'm working here. I'm not a janitor. I'll just throw it on the floor. It's like that. That won't work well.
And it's when you're talking about those core values, once you started realizing that, did you set up a screening mechanism that kind of gives you an early warning system as to, oh, no, let's not go any faster?
Yes, it was twofold. One was business, financially. How would the structure look? How long is it going to take? Those kind of business. And the other one was personality. We would talk with the people, get to know them. Like I said, bring your personality, bring your hobbies and stuff into the business so I can see what else you are. I want to see who you are, not what you do. And that helped us separate, right?
Some of that is a trial and error basis as well.
That's our...
And I think that's where, you know, Tim and I are – complement strengths and weaknesses. And so, you know, Tim's passion and service is so strong that it sometimes would cross that line. Its service is very important in giving, but at some point you have to realize that, you know, there's too much taking going on. And so I think that the experiences that we had and being able to work together through that allowed us to become wiser and stronger in our business methodology.
Well, and you're applying that analytical look at it then and saying, hey, wait a minute, here's, you know, I've checked this box.
That comes first.
And you've checked this box. And then you get in there and you start seeing how you interact then and say, okay,
right,
it's not going to work for these reasons.
Yeah. Does it match our core value? Does it make sense in the long run? We don't need a return on investment right away, but in the long run, here it comes. Oh, yeah, this will pay off in the end, blah, blah, blah. And then the second page is, what's their personality? Do these people have a sense of humor? Because that's obviously, for me, that's number one on my checklist.
Yeah, it would be painful for you not to work with someone with a sense of humor. And you run into those clients that they expect the consultant to come in and then run the business for them or absolve them from making the changes and the accountability. So how do you set in place for your clients that as you are pulling out, they're going to maintain those standards, they're educated on what they're supposed to be doing? How do you sort of do a transfer of values to them?
The transfer of values comes from personality. They either pick it up and they run with it or they don't. Legally, we have a disclaimer. these are
right.
What we're implementing are actually government regulations.
Right.
So they're going to get inspected by the government on an annual basis or biannual basis. So it's actually Lisa came up and said, we're going to put a disclaimer here that says, look, if you don't follow these, we're not running your lab. We're advising you on how to run your lab, but if you don't take our advice...
I have the same disclaimer in my government contract advising stuff.
But also, you've developed over the years a really great, which you've turned into now more a software program, which that's how we're moving forward. Mm-hmm. But it's very, there's different categories of the testing methodology. There's
so you're giving them standard sheets that they have to monitor and check.
It's a step-by-step
monthly program that Tim reviews with them. And, you know, that's the training. As Tim goes in on a monthly basis and works with them, you know, now they've
it becomes part of their process and their system at self-checking.
We hope
that's
so,
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that actually, we at the beginning, you know, when I decided, okay, I was a consultant whether I wanted to be or not, and now I'm a consultant. Now how do I do it professionally? What do I charge?
Right.
And I looked at what other people were charging, and I didn't like it. I didn't like their method. So I came up with my own, something that I thought was fair, based on the idea of a fair day's pay for
right.
a fair
day's
work, right? Simple enough. I'm an old farmer kid at heart.
Value for value.
I grew up on a farm, value for value.
The only BS she wants in the cow field, right?
That's right. So what we did was, so I set that method up there. I forgot what we were talking about. You threw in BS, and I was thinking of a joke right away because that's the way my brain works.
Yeah.
So, I have a bit of ADD.
I figured it would do that.
Yeah. So I would come up with how I wanted to do the consulting in my way.
Right.
And that's what we did. Fair was fair. And that's even that was a kind of a outside the box. It's like, I see what they're doing, but I'm going to do something a little bit different, even with working with the people and whatnot. And so that allowed us to, in the future, business people considered what I was doing counterintuitive, because if I do my job really well, these people don't need me after about a year or two.
Well,
what they're doing, they can cut me loose and run their own laboratory.
And I say amen when that happens.
Absolutely.
With a client, because that's what we're supposed to do. We're consultants. We're not live-ins.
Exactly.
We're not part of the organization.
And it opens it up to take more clients.
Right.
So right now, the only bridle on our business is
your capacity.
We don't have enough.
Right,
it's me. We're bringing on more staff now who I'm training to do exactly what I do, and then I can focus on the other part of it. But it's been that way for a couple of years, so we've been able to let labs go and pick up new businesses. And so that's why I've done over 100, but I still currently only manage about 30.
So I want to pick up on that. So you're bringing people into your team to do what you do,
mm-hmm.
and no one's you. So what skill set are they bringing or are you looking for? Because there's not going to be little Tims with improv background and personalities. Mm-hmm. So how are you translating what you do and what you want them to do with your customers and holding true to your values and selecting those people, training them, and then getting them deployed?
The two key components are passion and purpose.
Okay.
They got to feel like this is right, and personality. So they got to feel like, yeah, this is, I'm doing this for the right reason. So they have to have the same common core of, I need to do this, and the idea of service. Because when I get them on board, I'm also going to give them the freedom to make mm-hmm. choices on their own. I don't want them to have to come back to me every day. You know, so some one of the good, if you're starting a business, one of the things you might want to do is study Six Sigma. Just lean. I'm not a black belt in Six Sigma. I've studied it. But the Lean Six Sigma was key both in setting up laboratories and running a bit, being able to consult. Well, I can go in and identify a problem immediately based on what I learned from Six Sigma process organization.
So talk about that a little bit more in case our audience doesn't know what Six Sigma is. What is it and how are you using
it? Six Sigma is Toyota's idea. They stole it from Henry Ford. Which is odd because we don't use it anymore and they do. They have a Henry Ford Award and we don't.
Yes.
Odd. Anyway.
We use Deming.
Right. So Six Sigma is this common sense idea of process and production. And it uses people. It uses the combination of the two. So when I go into an office and I ask someone, show me the workflow of your paperwork. Well, I do this here and then I hand it to Betty. And then Betty does this kind of thing. And I go to Betty, Woody, well, I do this, but the computer's not working, so I do it this way, blah, blah, blah. So now I have to go back and go, well, what happens if Betty's not here? Well, it piles up. Ah, here we go. So here's your break in the system. So Six Sigma teaches you to set up, first of all, is that step necessary? So you're looking at, again, the
you're
shortest
looking
distance
at a process
between. Yep, the shortest distance between.
From start of
ports.
Your process mm-hmm. to delivering whatever it's going
to
be
to
delivering.
To making the product. What's the widget look like? That's right. And how many steps are used? Because the less steps, the less cost. So how many steps do you really need to create that product? What can be combined? What can be eliminated? And those steps are positions, not people. You find the right people for that position. So manufacturing versus sales, these are positions that need to be in the organization. then staffed with the right people. But if you have the people who don't really have a position, but nothing gets done without them, that's where everything falls apart.
Right. So you're looking at bottlenecks, capacity of those people. Because when I work with different businesses, especially manufacturing is always the best example, you see them investing in more and more equipment and things are not improving. Why? Because they're not investing at the capacity, the bottleneck. They're right. not investing in the right points in the processes.
Yeah.
And so it has no effect on the ultimate capacity of the organization.
Right. And that's effective change management.
Right.
So when you're especially today in the medical offices where everybody's going digital, electronic medical records and that kind of stuff, I go into so many offices that 50% of the people, usually under 40, are into it. And the other people are like, I like my paper. So they're using both methods. Why are you still using it? Well, Kathy at the front desk won't learn the other system. Well, then Kathy needs to go. Because she is now, you just spent $100,000 on a system.
That you don't get to use and don't get the effect
of. Kathy either needs to play ball or Kathy, it's time for Kathy to retire. But that's okay. That's a business common sense. It's not being mean to anybody. But again, I'd rather have Kathy trained. So the reason
Kathy gets to make that choice. So you're offering Kathy the choice to get on board, get trained and stay.
Right.
Or find some place that has a completely paper system.
Right. And Kathy, we're going to do everything we can to help you stay on board because you're an excellent worker and you do so well with the paper system. Can't imagine what you're going to do with the new system. So we really would like you to learn how to do this. So it's to discover what is Kathy's aversion to change or whatever. And then, yes, she gets to make that choice. I don't want to learn something new. Okay, it's time for you to retire. And that's just business. But
you're pegging on one of the articles I wrote. It was like, who's running your business?
Yeah, who's running your business?
Because you get there and a client and they're saying, and it's like, well, how does this system work? I don't know. He built it and he's the only one that can use it.
Yeah.
And if he gets hit by a bus or he gets mad at you, what happens? It's like, you know, you got to take control of those components.
Yeah,
that's something that we've thought about too as bringing new people in. One of our mottos is hire for the attitude, train for the job.
Right.
So the training aspect is a lot easier than changing somebody's attitude.
Amen.
Yeah. That's one of the first things I tell people when we're looking for people. I'll hire for the attitude way over anything else. I don't care what degree you got. It really doesn't matter because sometimes those are people are harder to work with because they have their own idea. They have a degree. They know what they're doing. And they bring in, it's like, okay, you need to work with us here.
Point to make that, and especially if you're a small business and it's critical to the next person you bring in, they have to be willing to wear multiple hats. If you need to pack up a bunch of books to ship because somebody suddenly ordered 100 books, they need to be willing to help you pack the books and get them to shipping. Not that, well, I have a degree in accounting and I only do accounting.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And so it's that willingness to engage in what the business needs.
Yeah. And I think that's so dead on that as a kid, I learned, like growing up in a foster home, I didn't have a father. So it was one woman that raised seven of us, seven boys and girls. And so there wasn't a gender stereotype.
Right.
So there wasn't the guys mowed the lawn. It was whoever had time mowed the lawn. And whoever did the dishes was whosever turn it was. It didn't matter if you were the guy or the girl. So it was that idea of pitching in. And then when it became a lab tech, and I'm a generalist, which means so I do microbiology, chemistry, hematology, parasitology. So in a laboratory, you did whatever. Right. You drew the blood, you emptied the trash, whatever you needed to do. And when I got into the business world where it wasn't that, it was like, no, I'm an accountant and this is all I do. I'm like, well, that's crazy.
Right, because the whole world has become so specialized. I'm going to say millennials even more so than any other generation that they do one thing or people do their profession. And I know when I started my business, they said, what do you do? I said, I do business. And they're like, well, that's general. I was like, no, that's specific. That's making all the parts come together. Because if you only know the accounting as a business person, then you're not taking care of your marketing. If you only know the marketing, you're not doing this part. So generalists, in a lot of ways, are the mechanics that make everything come together and able to work because you can pick up whatever else needs to happen.
Yeah, I recommend there should be a generalist in every, no matter what type of business there is, somewhere the manager has to be a generalist. He has to know all the jobs from the ground up. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, you probably already know it because that's how you got there.
Right.
So you know every aspect of your job. And I always recommend entrepreneurs.
I think I'll say if you're a successful entrepreneur, you know every aspect of the job.
Right, you know everything, right. Or want to be.
Right.
So one of the things was, so did we decide, okay, this is going to be a business. I'll take a business course.
Right.
You know what I learned in the business course was how to hire a right accountant. That's what, you know what I mean? I took it and said, well, I'll do my own books. I'll save a ton of money. After I learned it, I'm like, here's what I learned. I know how to make sure I have a good accountant, but I also
learned
that
you can read that they're doing their job. You can read the product
exactly,
of that.
Yep.
That's why I tell my clients, you don't have to be able to do a debits and credits. It's great if you can go into QuickBooks and do it, but you're not going to see it say debit this and credit that. You're going to increase and decrease. But if you can't figure out if your accountant's doing it correctly or your annual reports are getting filed, you're going to be in a heap of hurt when that person walks out with your financial amount.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
And you don't know what happened. And the government's knocking on your door saying,
yeah,
you didn't pay your taxes. Well, my accountant was supposed to. Well, no.
Nope, too
it's
bad.
The business owner, the buck stops there.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. So now I'm in the position of the business of we're taking my management program and making it a software. Right now it's a program. It's a compilation of Word documents for forms and spreadsheets that I've learned how to do. I'm self-taught in all this, and I love it. It's figuring out that it's that magic.
I love building models
spreadsheets
and stuff like
and
that.
Stuff. Yeah. So
I don't like using them after I build them. But
yeah. But I'm not a programmer.
Right.
So now I've come to the point where I need to know a programmer. So I started looking at what's it take to be a programmer. So now that I'm finding the right programmer, I already know, oh, this is what I'm looking for in programmers. So same kind of thing. So I don't hire somebody who's incompetent, who just has a degree, but doesn't have that same passion that I have
for
their business.
That's true for any business partner. If you're going to get your website built,
and
if you don't know what you want in your website, well, don't expect the website person to be able to do it for you. It's your business. You have to understand what it is. And I was talking with my website people yesterday. And for them, the most challenging thing is to get someone to make a decision, just to execute on the parts, because they sit there waiting to do their part. And they can't get a picture, or they can't get a bio page, or they can't get content to load. And so as a business owner, you have to understand what you want your business to be. No one else can do it for you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, and that all stems back to setting up your core value. What is it? If you have something to focus on, it allows you to answer that question. What are you looking for? Oh, okay. So yeah, ground yourself with a core value. Figure out what you want to do early on.
Well, and usually the successful business is usually part of that is service. What's best for the customer ends up being best for your business.
Sure.
Honesty. I mean, I've had clients tell me, you're honest to a fault. Well, I'm like, I'm going to tell you if I'm not the right person to do it. It's more cost effective for somebody else or whatever. I can do it. But why pay my rate when you can get more hours over here and they really should be doing it? And those kind of core values translate to referral systems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just basically stick to the core of not trying to rip people off and you'll be okay. If you know you're not the right
shear the sheep and not slaughter it.
That's it. That's it. There's plenty of business for everybody.
I think that's so true in staying true to those values and to the service. Moving forward with that, you know, laying out a website, there was revisions that needed to be made. You know, and it can be overwhelming, and that can make people get stuck. Like, I don't know what to do, so they don't do anything.
Right.
And we found, you know, okay, so we know that this is the message we're trying to relay, so we'll lay that message out. Okay, so that it might need to be tweaked a little bit, but that the only way you can do it is to do the initial layout.
To start.
Exactly.
You start somewhere.
You have to start, and I can't say enough that I think that's an obstacle for a lot of people in moving forward.
Well, it's like, what if it's not right to start? What if I have to do it over or whatever? And it's like, but what if stops you from
taking it? Oh, get out of the what if. What if will kill you?
Yes.
Right. I always tell people.
That's the biggest box people get into is, well, what if it's not?
What if? Yeah.
Right. What if?
Because those people are just cynical usually in that. Well, what if? I'm like, what if we get hit by a tornado? What if it ends tomorrow? If you go by what ifs, you will never go anywhere. There's a great book, Decisive, that
You're
I'm just finishing
author.
Up. Yep. Yeah. I wrote down their name, so if anybody wants it, the book Decisive is from, it's two brothers. It's Chip Heath and Dan Heath. Their other book is called Switch. About effective change management. It's awesome. Really good book as well.
Switch and Decisive by the Heath Brothers.
By the Heath Brothers, yep. Chip and Dan. But that's what it talks about, is that very thing. How to stay out of what stops you from making a decision.
Well, people get stopped by worrying about what if something in the future, or what should have been. I wish I had.
Oh, that's the...
Or, if only I had. And those... It's wasting energy on what you didn't do right. Look at it. Learn what you did differently. File that lesson to use forward, but then say, what if that happens again? Well, you just had that lesson.
Yeah.
So as long as you learned it, that what if won't happen again.
There's a trick I learned early on, an article. I think Lisa sent it to me probably 10 years ago now when we were doing this kind of stuff. It was how to replace the what ifs from the past, or I should have.
Right.
Replace the word should have with next time. And that's how you learn.
So when you say, next time I'll know.
I will know. So if someone else has come up to you, so when you go, what I should have done was blah, 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 write down next time, this is what I'll do.
Right.
And that's progress. That shows a positive attitude. It's like, okay, this is why it's not going to happen again. Because so many people make the same mistake. And then they're saying for the third time, I should have done what I should have done the other time instead of next time. And then sticking to it. Look at your notes and go, oh, this is it next time.
Well, not just that. It's like, what are those frameworks that says, okay, what was that trigger that made me repeat that?
Yeah.
Do I have the tendency to not want to say no?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have the tendency to not want conflict? Why did you choose to repeat that behavior?
Yeah.
And then look for those triggers and hopefully have a spouse or someone on your team that'll say, hey, wait a minute, you're doing it again.
Yeah, it's nice to have someone to bounce
that
it off.
That check and balance.
There's another good book by John Miller, the QBQ. Question behind the question. Have you ever heard of John?
Uh-huh.
So, and a lot of big companies are using this system now, but QBQ is about personal responsibility. And it's interesting because he just had sent an email about so many people read the book and go, oh, I need this to give my buddy. He really needs it. And they're missing the point.
Everybody really needs it. Yeah.
Everybody else needs this but me.
That's a little bit like the Bible saying, you know, you're going to take the smoke out of somebody else's eye and you're missing the big stick in your own.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
It's there was another, the QB personal responsibility issue. I just had another blank. But I like what it focuses on, that you're finding your weaknesses and your strengths as well. So it's all in service, but it's about, okay, where's my service strongest?
Right.
What do I need to work on? And it's not about, oh, hand that off to somebody, unless you want to. But it's the idea of, oh, I'm not so good at conflict. So maybe I need to take a class or do something to improve that there.
You know, and I think, and when I work with international companies and stuff, and they always point out here in the United States, we're always wanting to spend our time working on what we're not good at.
Mm-hmm.
And over there, they focus on work anywhere, what they're good at. And
that's
so
right.
If I'm not good at conflict, then I'll bring somebody else in to help mediate that.
Mm-hmm.
If I know, and I do that for my clients. If they don't want to do the conflict, they're going to be in the room and I'll fire or I'll do whatever just because I know they're going to have a nervous breakdown doing it. But they have to be there to be accountable for it.
Yeah.
And go through that process. Or you bring in a mediator or whatever it is necessary. But we do. I think we spend a lot of time and energy trying to fix what we're not good at.
Mm-hmm.
When if we took that same time and energy and did what we were good at, so whether that's sales or whatever we're in business to deliver,
yep.
And we hire the accountant or we hire the website person, we're putting our resources and maximizing our return and theirs because we're doing what we're good at.
Yeah, referrals. Yeah, bring everybody else in. There's, like I said, there's plenty of business here for everybody. And that's what we try to do, too, is bring in other, especially friends, people we know what they're doing.
And you trust.
We're not afraid to say, here's the guy you need. I'm not that. You need this guy or you need this. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I love teaming because with the clients scattered around the country, if I need somebody in Boston, I can send an email and say, okay, I need a lawyer that specializes in contract law in this industry for this.
Yeah.
I mean, I get emails pretty much every week when an article goes out on, well, you know, here comes a contract. Somebody in Iowa is sending me, wanting me to review. One, I'm not an attorney. And I'll say, okay, but this is confidential, so let me get you an attorney. And I send out an email saying, I need an attorney in Iowa for a nonprofit contract.
Yeah.
And that network works. And then, you know, then I'll get an email saying, well, we're looking for this. And you can configure the right people, the right skill sets around. In this world, you know, most of us run virtually.
Well,
you need to be able to adapt and create a team for what that customer needs.
Yeah, that's the most wonderful thing for me is Google.
Yeah.
I've told my kids since they were little, I don't know everything, but I can find it out right away. And that was before Google. And every time I do something, my kids are amazed when I do like housework. I can work swing a hammer or something. They'll go like, how'd you do that? I said, I can read. I can do anything. Really? I said, yes, I can do anything because I can read.
And you're willing to go out to find the directions.
Well, that's the thing. And so now, you know, Google has opened up the material that I can read. You know, as so as a kid, this goes back to the question about the bookmobile. When I was 8 years old, I was a foster kid, and we were in Montreal. My grandfather had me in Montreal, and this magician took me off to the side and taught me a magic trick because he knew I was a foster kid, so he's kind of he was just helping out, right? So when I got back home, this is a farm upstate New York on the Canadian border. We aren't far from Montreal. That's why we were there. So we had a bookmobile that came around and asked my grandmother, can I get books on magic? And that's what she asked them for that. And that's how I started doing magic, was from that. And kids today, if you want to learn magic, it's you can't even go through all the material on the internet to learn a new trick or the books or societies. And it's just fun. There's no, you know, this is a time in our history when we should – everybody should just up their intelligence level 1,000 times, because what's available for material, what saddens me is to see the kids just playing video games when at the same time they could just be reading something to grow their brain.
But it's a different motivation. Because again, some people accept the box and it says, okay, my box is here. And whether that's, you know, you said, you know, welfare, all those kind of things coming out of that system. But some people find that's where they want to rest. They want it to be a hammock versus a safety net.
Yeah.
And that same thing translates to their career, to their businesses. And you get in there, and if you ask the question, are you in business to make money? And the answer is no, then don't be in business. Because we go into business to make money. Nonprofits, the same way, they have to generate money for their mission. The difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit is, when is the money going to get to a community project or, you know, just a donation? Nonprofit is not owned by anybody and it's supposed to benefit a mission then. For-profits generate business to support their churches, to support their communities, to hire people to do things around the house. And so that system comes around. And so having a profit motive when it comes out of value exchange is really a noble thing to do.
Sure.
I'm going to give everybody more than what I charge them.
Yeah.
You know, and serving them, that is just such a great reason to be in business, because that's what all businesses are there for.
When I the workshop that I do on Imagine the Impossible, Find a Way to Do It, first thing we start with is finding your purpose. So I ask the audience about that, is do you actually know your purpose? Because everybody, oh, God put me here for a reason or whatever you want to believe, but I'm here for a purpose. So I ask them just for a second to think about truly, what is your purpose? And your purpose should be your passion as well.
Right.
Because I know a lot of doctors who should be painting because they're incredible artists. And they hate being a doctor. But their father was a doctor. They went to med school to be a doctor. So they work to make money. But it's not making them happy. Imagine if you could make money fulfilling your purpose. And I believe that's what we're here to do. And it actually goes into, scientifically, they studied this. So it's one of the things that keep you, it's called an internal commitment. So when you go to sleep at night, if you're one of those people that's from, I can't sleep, and you wake up, I was tossing, I couldn't sleep. There's a part of your brain that stores internal commitments. Internal commitments are, you're walking around the house and a light bulb's out. And you go, oh, I got to remember to buy light bulbs next time I'm at the store. Or my cousin is graduating this month. I need to make sure I get a card for graduate. So with all these little things that you didn't do, you put them on your procrastination list in your brain.
And they start popping up as you go to sleep.
They call internal. Right. And even you go to the store and you don't remember to buy the light bulb because it's an internal commitment. What your brain does at nighttime, it downloads internal commitments. But you're sleeping. So it's a real bad time to bring it up. But you're tossing and you're turning. You don't know why.
Unless you're going to reach over to Amazon and start ordering all the things you didn't get to the store today.
Exactly. That's why they recommend, if you can't sleep at night, get up and write down the list of stuff that you need to do. And you'll find you can sleep again. So it's kind of how our brain works. It's those so here's the important part. One of those internal commitment questions is something that we don't ask consciously. We only ask subconsciously. And the question is, have I fulfilled my purpose today?
Yeah, and that dissonance keeps you.
So if my purpose is in service to man, providing lab results, faster results for faster treatment and better patient care, I have a job where I can fulfill my purpose at the same time. Wow. That I found that to be the key.
Right.
And it's the same thing. And it's not to say that all of them has to be artistic or altruistic. Okay.
Right.
So if you're really good at accounting and your purpose is to help people because you're a math geek and you can do this.
Help people keep the IRS off your back.
That's the guy I want to hire
right.
because he's found his purpose.
Well, I think it's an ad or something on the radio. I think it's on the radio now. it describes this guy that, you know, he was sitting on the sidewalk and he would watch the cars go by and he was memorizing the license plates because he wanted to see how often somebody came by. And then he got a little bit older and it had something else to do with numbers. And he got a little bit older. He found a book basically on investing and he got fascinated with it. You listen to the story and you start coming along and it's like when they get to the fact that he's in Omaha, you know, it's like, okay, it's Warren Buffett, right?
Yeah.
And he created, because he found that niche as a small child. Mm-hmm. He liked data. He liked statistics. He talked to the person that had the book that he thought was just a guru.
Yeah.
He learned from that person,
yeah.
And he found his purpose.
Yeah.
And he's a multi-billionaire.
Right.
Not everybody's purpose is going to play out that way.
But he gives away. And the important part there is it wasn't all about the money. So he gives away.
It was a byproduct.
He gives it. Right. He's just like, oh, I got $1 billion just from doing what I love to do. So he can give away that $1 billion. Because that's really not what it's for. And to me,
but most of the people you see that make the money out of doing whatever, mm-hmm. it's been a byproduct. They didn't go out and say, I'm setting out to become a billionaire.
Right.
I'm going because I want to do real estate. And,
yep.
you know, I like doing this. So Donald Trump.
I like putting people in houses.
I like people in
houses. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, cars or whatever it is they're passionate about. The money becomes a byproduct
mm-hmm.
of it. Now, I think there's a rabbi I like to read his business books, Rabbi Lappin. And one of the things he says, people get told to do what you love and money will come. He says, I'll tell you to find out something that you can learn to love to do mm-hmm. and the money will come.
Yeah.
Because it works both ways. Because
sure.
you can't always be improv. That's what you love to do. It may not always translate. But you can take that same love for it and put it in your business mm-hmm. and apply it a different way.
Sure. And now what I love to do is teach it.
Right.
So, yeah, it's these doors are always opening. It's about looking inside that room. You know, when a door opens up, walk inside that room, walk around for a minute and go, oh, yeah, I think I could be comfortable here and embrace it. Or you walk in, you go, I'm not good here. Close that door and go to another one. It's infinite, the amount of doors that we got opening up. And it's about saying yes. You got to try it out. If you use the what ifs or no, that's not me, you don't know that's not you. You don't know that, you know?
Well, and we're all wired different ways because it's like, you know, there's nothing that says, and I had a guest on last year where they take your fingerprints and relate it to different parts of your brain and says, how are you hardwired to learn, to interact with the world? Is it visual? Is it auditory? And then looking at that hardwiring and accepting that. So in India, they're actually teaching in the schools using that. And it's causing such great results to happen because each child gets kind of put in a box to some extent, yes, but it's the box they belong in. So if they're a visual learner, they get to learn visually. If they're an auditory learner, if you need to touch things to learn, you know, and recognizing sure. that as business people or as any other profession, find the way it fits for you and don't take the expectation of the world expects you to do a doctor and you want to be an artist.
Right. And that going back to that learning auditory, kinesthetically and visually, that's where I learned that early on. I brought that into my workshops as a speaker. Because I don't know what they are.
Right.
So one of the things the magic tricks does is bring in the kinesthetics. They can hear me, they can see me, so I make sure I'm physical. That's that's an actor theater part, but that's what keeps everybody engaged. And so if they didn't get it from listening to me, but they see the magic trick, because every trick that I do is a metaphor for a point of my subject. So if I'm talking about imagine the impossible and I pour water in a cup and I tip it up inside my head and it disappears, people get it.
Right.
Because now the conversation after makes sense. Like, oh, I saw what he did. And I'm a visual learner. In fact, 70% of the country are visual learners. Most people are visual learners. So I found that really interesting just on a side. But then you bring that in. Anything you learn, try to bring into your business. That's it. It's all there.
Well, and don't try to force your system on anybody else. I can show somebody how to be organized,
mm-hmm.
but if it freaks them out, they're never going to use it.
Oh, absolutely.
And that appreciation, too, for what are your strengths. I think, like you said, Lee, you know, we so often focus on, oh, this is my weakness. I need to get it stronger.
And hide it.
Hide it or try to make it stronger. No, embrace that you don't organize well or embrace that you're not as
creative.
You
notice she pointed at me when she said you don't organize?
Yeah, I was going to point that out for the listeners.
But this is what Tim and I have developed in our relationship. Personally and in business, we appreciate each other's strengths and weaknesses.
Well, and I mean, that's very valuable because I've had a few clients that the couples own the business, right? And you come in and one has to have the spreadsheet and it has to be filled out and 100% filled out. And here's the other one, you know, and I'll be honest, it's usually flipped around the other way. that the guy has to have his spreadsheets and he wants everything based on that analytical information, and he's, and the wife's making, you know, a seat of the pants decision, which may or may not turn out to be the correct decision. But when they get together and you're trying to have a business discussion, that dynamic, instead of strengthening them, was building walls in their relationship and in their business. And so you have to say, hey, wait a minute, mm-hmm. look at that as complimentary. She's going to get you out of the analysis paralysis, and he's going to keep you from making the bad decisions.
That's right.
So play to those strengths.
Yeah. I did want to mention that, too. We coach other people going into business, and we tell people that if your spouse is not on board, you have to make a decision at that time. Do you want to do the business or do you want to be divorced?
Right.
Because you're not going to have you both. If it's going to be a family-run business, all the family needs to be on board, even if it's just the two of them.
Well, and also, if it's more than siblings, particularly parents and siblings, when they're starting a business, mm-hmm. they're going to have to make a commitment to not saying, well, he's the baby, he can't run the business.
That's right.
Because the baby may have the business head and everybody else now at work. Now, he'll still be the baby at home. Yeah, it's not, you're not going to get around that. But when you get to the workplace, the respect for their skill set has to be there. And you have to break some of those dynamics.
It's interesting. We like to watch what we call at night. We'll sit down and try to catch mindless TV. So we usually watch comedies and stuff. But one of our favorite shows has been a Bar Rescue.
Oh, yeah. John Taffer.
Right. John Taffer or the Restaurant Impossible. And that's what they do. And when they go in, most of the businesses are failing because of the people.
The family dynamic or whatever's going on in the organization. Yep.
Stubborn old dad who didn't want to change. I'm doing fine. No, you're losing $5,000 a month.
A minute.
And we're not gonna, they just can't see that. And it really is a belligerence of, my son can't do it. No, you can't do
it. Lack of accountability. Yeah. And
Or the role, the defined roles, or the unwillingness to hurt somebody's feelings, or like you were saying, wrong person in the right role, or the wrong role is even defined there. And so they deal with that. So those are kind of fascinating to watch.
I love to watch those.
Because sometimes it's like that train wreck, and it's like, and you see that during the day. I try to make all my clients that want to start restaurants watch those shows, or anybody that wants to pitch to investors, they have to watch Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And if they can come out of there and not realize that their valuations are wrong, then they need to go back and watch Shark Tank again and again.
Yeah, I love Shark Tank.
Or the Food Fortunes now is the same way. So I now have new tools to have the clients look at to say, what, this is the way it happens. And that they're usually, they think, well, they're being just harsh, or it's just for TV. It's like, no, that's reality. That's the way it is.
That's what's really fun. Yeah, it's we love to watch people. We love to watch life and people. And now those make sense to me. That's like, oh, that's really, you can tell the editing, so it's just done. The effect is for drama, but the basics is still there.
They're still doing that there. So we have like 1 minute. If you could give everybody one tip, the golden rule that you would say every business needs to use, what would that be, Tim?
Purpose. Find your purpose. That's going to be your guide. Everything focuses on that core value. What is it you want to do in service of, not just what do I want to do? It can't say, I want a bigger house. That's not what you want to do. That's a want. I want to help people fill in the blank.
Right.
And then that's a good business if that's what you want to do.
All right, and I want to thank Tim and Lisa Dumas for being on the show today. And I want to remind everyone that the station is wholly funded by donations, and we are having a fundraiser on May 7th from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Hickory Tavern here at the Hampton Inn on 370 East Main Street. And we hope you will be there to support WCOM-FM. And until next time, everybody, stay focused on the important things.